Hi, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for listening to our show. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media platform at Golf News Net. Check us out on Roku TV. Head over to golfnewsnet.com for all of your golf news needs. And we are presented by BetDSI.com. We use their odds each and every week on all of our tours odds posts, and we love using them because we get to see how the money moves in real time, how that affects odds, and what that does to the money that's coming in for the rest of the week. So even if you're in a jurisdiction where you can't bet legally online on sports, but you're into fantasy golf, BetDSI.com is a great place to go to see where the smart money is going and also where the dumb money is going for that matter. And it can help you pick your fantasy lineups each and every week. Okay, so we haven't done a show in a little while. Last week we were at the Senior PGA Championship for a couple days earlier in the week, and then went on a little early Memorial Day weekend vacation, so didn't do a show last week. But obviously we wanted to do one this week, and that was before Memorial Day and what happened to Tiger Woods. So I want to spend a little bit of time on that. I don't want to spend the whole show on that because I don't think that's fair. This is a golf podcast. This isn't a police blotter podcast, but I think there are some things that need to be explained. I think there needs to be some kind of natural reaction to this, and I just feel like I have to say what I have to say, and I don't feel comfortable saying it on Twitter or Facebook. My most comfortable medium is talking, and so that if you'll afford me a few minutes to get to that, I would appreciate it. Or you can just fast forward and get to whatever we get to next. It's probably going to be about 20 minutes from now, so you decide. But I appreciate it either way. So as you know, Tiger Woods was arrested after a traffic stop early Monday morning. About 3 a.m., he was found by an officer on the side of what's called Military Trail Southbound in Jupiter, Florida, about 3 miles from his restaurant, the Woods Jupiter, about 8 miles from his house in Hope Sound, although best I can tell, there isn't really a direct path from the island to his restaurant to Military Trail and stuff like that, so not sure how he got there. But he was heading in the opposite direction of those two places when he was found. He was falling asleep in the driver's seat, seatbelt buckled, foot on the brake, right turn signal on, 2 flat tires on the driver's side, some fresh damage to that side. The officer woke him up, asked him a series of questions. If you saw any of the 29.5-minute dash cam video from the stop last night when it was released by the Jupiter Police Department, then you don't really need this explanation. But the officer and then another officer who came, and there were others who were there, they kind of went through a series of questions with him. Was he drinking? Where is he coming from? Is he on prescription medications? Woods was cooperative throughout. He was certainly groggy at best. He was stumbling on his words, he was stumbling on his story. He said he was coming back from Los Angeles from playing golf, but he didn't know where he was and he didn't know where he was going. He did mention several prescription medications by name, including one, Vioxx, that is off the U.S. market. That could just have been from memory. Who knows? Then the second officer takes him through field sobriety tests, takes him through almost a handful of them. The test where you have to follow a light with your eyes, but not with your head. You have to do a test where you close your eyes and with your arms at your side, at command, touch your nose, and then bring your arm back to your side. You have to walk a straight line, heel to toe, a certain number of steps, counting the steps as you go. And they made him say the alphabet backwards, or not backwards, excuse me, just say the alphabet, English alphabet, forward, but not like in a song, so you couldn't sing the ABC song and that would be okay. It didn't go well. It's pretty rough to watch. It's rough to watch really anybody go through that kind of thing, whether they are intoxicated on alcohol, whether they've consumed illicit drugs, or whether they're on prescription medication, or they're taking an opioid, which that's what Vicodin is an opioid. It's a terribly powerful painkiller. I know people personally who take it, who kind of need it for chronic pain. They've developed tolerances to it. They understand that. They recognize that. Some of them do dangerously mix alcohol with them at times. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to drive with Vicodin. You're not supposed to do a lot of things with Vicodin except lay down and wait for it to wear off, basically. So 29 and a half minutes into it, Woods is put into the back of a squad car and presumably taken to Palm Beach County Public Jail, where he is booked. After taking some more sobriety tests, giving a urine sample, blowing a breathalyzer twice at 0.000, and then he was released at about 10:50 a.m. on his own recognizance. He will ultimately be arraigned on July 5th on charges of driving under the influence and illegal parking. My first reaction is, as someone who believes in personal responsibility, that this is abhorrent behavior and that there should be no sympathy because Tiger Woods could have killed someone. And I said the same thing when Stephen Bowditch was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol the week of the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He could have killed somebody. Could have killed himself. Could have injured somebody. Could have injured himself. Frankly, given the damage to Woods' car, it is a miracle. It's a miracle he was not severely injured, wasn't found with the car turned over on its head, with him on his head, on the top of the vehicle. And if you're engaging in that behavior, then I have no sympathy for you. Or it's really hard for me to find that. Because ultimately, he knows. He knows taking these prescription medications, mixing them can cause problems. You shouldn't be driving an automobile when you're taking them under no circumstances. I mean, it just says it explicitly on almost all of those types of medications. Do not do the following things while using these drugs, while they're in your system. And driving is one of them. I mean, you're not even supposed to drive when you take NyQuil. So why would you drive when you're taking Vicodin? And I've never experienced Vicodin. I don't know what it feels like. I have no idea. But I imagine from what I've been told, you're kind of in this ultra-relaxed state of mind, and it affects everyone a little bit differently. But it can kind of knock you out of it for a while. If you add in other painkillers, and of course we don't know that mix yet, and we may never, it can get worse. So the only situation where I feel like I could have some sympathy for Tiger in the action that he did of driving under the influence of these medications, the only situation is where something similar to what Patrick Kennedy, U.S. House Representative Patrick Kennedy, went through a number of years ago when he crashed his car, I believe it was a Ford Mustang, and he said he was on Ambien, didn't remember any of it. Ambien's a sleep drug, didn't remember any of it. There's an account from Ron Witten, who is one of the best at golf course architecture. He understands it. He's fascinating. Over at Golf Digest, architectural editor. And he told a story, very brief one, on Twitter, a little string last night about how he had basically driven 40 or 50 miles before he realized he had gone somewhere. He eventually was taken in an ambulance to a hospital and didn't remember any of it. He was later told that he called a head pro in Texas of a place he was going to go visit and was just speaking gibberish. If that happened, if that's what this is, then I can understand. He still shouldn't have had access to his keys while he was under these medications. This should be like a lockbox for him, like only someone else knows the code. I don't know. But that would be at least somewhat understandable. But if that's not the case, and that is most likely not, then Woods did something irresponsible. And again, it's hard for me to find sympathy for that, for doing that action. Again, I don't particularly care that he's out at 3 in the morning. I guess it matters to some people, to me, not necessarily. It matters if he was going to do something criminal, but I don't believe that was the case. I'm curious why he was driving away from his home as opposed to toward it. Where was he going? He says in the dash cam video that he likes to drive. And we kind of know that. He does have a problem sleeping, and he's talked about that before. His problem sleeping, that's why he takes Ambien, took Ambien. I don't know if he still takes it. That could be an issue here. Maybe he was just in pain and up late, popped a few pills, and then went on a drive just to try to relax a little bit, and it caught up with him. I mean, that could have happened too. Again, that would not be okay by me, but I'm trying to find plausible explanations for what happened. And maybe that's the wrong approach. Maybe trying to find the story out of the detail from the dash cam, from the police report, from Woods' statement, etc., isn't the right approach. Maybe we just wait for Woods, through his lawyer, on the July 5th arraignment, to explain what happened as much as they want to explain it. Or are they going to stick to this story that, which could wholly be accurate, that Woods had an unexpected reaction to these medications, either one or several together, who knows? And I understand where people are coming from when they say, don't judge him. Don't. Everyone's been there. And yeah, not everyone has had a DUI. Not everyone's been pulled over on suspicion of DUI. But people have made dumb choices, and they do it all the time. That doesn't necessarily mean we can't say that someone's made a dumb choice when we ourselves have made dumb choices. If raise your hand if you haven't made a dumb choice in your life. Obviously, I can't see you, but I know your hand's not up. Because we've all made dumb choices. Whether you want to call it sin, if you're particularly religious, or you want to call it being dumb, or somewhere in between, whether there was malice or not, we've all done things we regret. We've all done things we should not have done. Some in legal jeopardy, others not so. But that doesn't mean we aren't able to criticize somebody who does something like this, who does something that endangers lives. When Tiger cheated on his spouse, cheated on Ela Nordegren, and did it in a serial fashion, philandering, and I don't know how long that he did it, but eventually got caught and went public. And it went public in a very surreal way. That wasn't legal. That wasn't a legal problem. I mean, in terms of criminal conduct, it certainly was a problem in terms of civil issues, civil trial, civil suit. But this is different. And again, I said at the time when he went through his marital issues, the only people that he really had to apologize to for that stuff is his wife, family, his children, sponsors, people directly affected by his life, by his action. I think when someone commits a crime like this, you should have to apologize publicly because, again, you've risked public safety. If you cheated on your wife, that's between you and your wife. It leads to divorce or it doesn't. You explain it to your kids how you want. That's a personal matter. People may buy into a public figure having a wholesome personality because they're a winner or because they have a great smile or they're just particularly great at their skill, whatever that is. But this doesn't have to do with perception. This has to do with reality. This is what happened. Pending further explanation, we'll see how it works out in the court system. I have no idea what it's going to mean for his sponsorships. I don't know if the PGA Tour is going to suspend him or fine him. They could do that. But we've got a kind of a precedent in Dustin Johnson, right? Dustin came out publicly, said he's going to step away from golf for a while. He's going to deal with some personal issues. Seemingly dealt with those. I mean, obviously, I don't have a report card on where he is in 2017. I just don't. But was reported at the time that he kind of took this quote-unquote leave of absence because he was really going to get suspended or was suspended by the PGA Tour. They just chose to let him explain it in his own fashion, whatever that was. But again, it was personal behavior. As far as we know, he didn't endanger another life, didn't endanger public safety. And his sponsors stood by him. TaylorMade, remarkably, stood by him. And that loyalty came back to TaylorMade in terms of when Dustin Johnson re-signed with them after winning the U.S. Open. He re-signed with them, and he's with them and Adidas long-term because they stuck by him. That sets a precedent for how TaylorMade, who now sponsors Tiger Woods, and Bridgestone, whose ball Tiger would play were he capable, and Nike, who has been with him for 20 years, sets a precedent for how do they react to Woods' situation. Depending on how it all plays out, I think we'll find out. And Nike also set a precedent, again, by standing with Tiger through his marital infidelity, right? And again, that's a personal action. That's not a public crime. It's not a public safety issue. So I'm curious what Nike will do. I guess we'll find that out over time. But I had to say that it doesn't matter the fact that Tiger blew zeros on a breathalyzer. It doesn't matter that he, at least as far as we understand it, was not on any illicit drugs. It does matter that he was on prescription medication. Even if it was a weird reaction to it. Again, on these types of medications, and we have an opioid crisis in this country, and this happens far too often. And I'm not saying Woods is in that territory. I have no idea if he has an addiction or a problem, and it's up to him to whether he wants to tell us that or not. But people have poor reactions to opioids all the time. Woods was prescribed them, thank goodness. But there are people who are not, who take them and have horrible reactions to them and wind up in terrible situations. That doesn't make it excusable because there's an RX next to it. You have to be able to handle this kind of stuff. If you put yourself in that situation, you need to be able to handle it. And if you can't handle it, you need to be able to find help for someone who can help you manage it. Whatever that is in life, I firmly believe that. The willingness to be able to take responsibility and ask for help when you need it are the most important things that someone is able to do. If you can do those things, you can get through a lot of stuff in life. And Tiger did that in golf. He took responsibility when he lost. He took responsibility when he won. He always kept pursuing goals and trying to be a better golfer. And he tried to apply those things and seemingly did after everything that happened in 2009 and 2010, and by most accounts, he's become a great father to his two kids, and he's got a good partnership with Elon. Where's that go? I just hope that how this works out for Tiger is he learned his lesson. If this was something that he did and kind of happened on his own, that how he should react to this medication in the future, I hope that this doesn't ever happen again for him. I hope that he is okay with his kids and his ex-wife, because that's important. More important than anything he's going to do golf-wise. And I hope that he gets back to a point where he can be happy and healthy post-surgery, a fourth back surgery in 3 years, and after whatever he's going to have to figure out on the end of medication. That's what I want him to be. And I think that's what everyone wants him to be. And I think that's why people have a genuine expression of sympathy and sadness. And they don't want to judge the guy, because they like what he did for them and what he did for golf. So they don't want to supposedly bite the hand that feeds them. But you're not. If you're critical of Tiger in this situation, you're not biting the hand that feeds you. You're having a human reaction to something that you might find abhorrent. You can still love someone, you can still appreciate what they've accomplished, and feel anger and sadness and some sense of shame for them and toward them because of what they've done. And you can still love them and appreciate them at the same time. That's what I feel about Tiger Woods right now. I will always appreciate what he did and the entertainment that he provided as being the greatest golfer I've ever seen. But at this time, with what happened, based on what we know, right now I feel a sense of anger toward the guy for that action. And I hope that the end result is a positive one. And I'm very thankful that no one was injured as a result of what he did. All right, so let's talk about the Memorial Tournament this week. This is Jack's tournament. It's Jack's baby. It's at Muirfield Village. It is one of my top 3 to 5 golf courses on the PGA Tour. I think if you talked about the best spots on the PGA Tour, you would have to bring up Muirfield. You would have to bring up Pebble, obviously, for really 10 holes. I mean, it's not all 18 holes, but the 10 that are seaside are really freaking good. TPC Sawgrass is in there. I love Harbor Town. I actually love the Greenbrier course. It's just classic. You may not, but I do. I love it. McDonald did an amazing job with it. I'm excited to see how it looks once its renovated state debuts in a few weeks when the Greenbrier Classic comes back after last year's horrible floods. So I love watching Muirfield Village on TV. It comes across great. It's beautiful in person. It's so green. It's outrageous. I mean, it's Augusta-like in its greenness. But obviously a little bit different feel in terms of you don't feel like you're in an arboretum at Muirfield Village versus Augusta National, which used to be a nursery. So you kind of know that. You kind of expect a certain feel, a certain look. There are pines there and conifers as opposed to deciduous trees by and large at Jack's Place. There's water on more holes, actually, at Jack's Place than Augusta National. It's just a gorgeous golf course. And Jack has tinkered with it over 44 years to the point where he has it where he wants it. I mean, he blew up the 16th hole a few years ago, 6 years ago, improved that. It was kind of a dud, made it better. He's improved every hole in the golf course in some fashion. It's an evolving thing for him that he has his eye on and will always have his eye on. That's why I like it. I love covering the tournament. The folks there treat media in particular well. The fans are knowledgeable. They're really engaged. Obviously a limited field, so you get a certain level of, you have a certain expectation of excellence for most of the players. It's a really well-run tournament. They improved its profile over the last couple of years, the PGA Tour did, giving winners a 3-year exemption instead of 2, and they bumped the purse to equal that of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, $8.7 million. So it's just below the level of the 4 FedEx Cup playoff events, the WGCs, and the majors. So, I mean, it's like the 12th and 13th T12 tournaments of the year in terms of money on the PGA Tour. It's a super experience. However, it also turns into Ask Jack Week, where Jack Nicklaus holds a news conference. And part of the allure of having Jack at a news conference is he's in his 70s, and he owns the place, and he doesn't have to hold back on anything that he doesn't want to, because he's Jack freaking Nicklaus. So it's a great opportunity to ask him about all things current in the game. Some stuff he sidesteps. He tends to do that sometimes when something just doesn't make him comfortable. So I'd rather not talk about that. I have a terrible Jack impression. And then there are some things that he gets into where he kind of goes down paths where you're like, that doesn't make any sense. Talking about Rory withdrawing, and then he kind of complained that Rory withdrew because he's a great player, but he's got an entourage or something about an entourage. You're like, where are you going with this, man? Like, it's not 45, 50 years ago anymore. Golf has changed. Deal with it. And sometimes he struggles with that. But there's also a cool component to it where they find someone to honor each year. They've done great ceremonies over the years, emotional ones with Tom Watson and Annika Sorenstam and Nancy Lopez, and this year they had Greg Norman, which I thought was cool, and it's a good atmosphere. I'm interested in what will happen to the memorial when the PGA of America relents and agrees to move the PGA Championship into May, and so the PGA Tour can move the players into March. It can lop off a FedEx Cup playoff event. It can bump up the schedule a little bit and have it done by the end of August, by Labor Day weekend, depending on how they choose to do it. Jack said, he was asked about it, and he said, hey, you know, I don't mind the move to May. The PGA Tour has assured us that if that happens, if the PGA Championship moves to May, we won't get screwed. We will have a good date. We'll be important. They want to help us grow our profile, as always. They want this tournament to be important. And I believe that because the PGA Tour made a commitment to the Arnold Palmer Invitational to keep it going in the year, you know, last year and the year before Mr. Palmer passed away. And they wanted to do that to preserve the future of the event so that good fields would come and pay tribute to one of the most important figures in our sport. And they did the same thing for Jack's tournament because they view Jack on equal footing. He has similar importance. And so they wanted to make sure that they had good standing and kind of prepare. Jack doesn't seem like he's in bad health. Doesn't seem like anything bad is going to happen to him anytime soon. But we're all mortal. It's going to happen someday. So they want to make sure they're on equal footing right now and move forward that way. So I presume that will continue. I presume the PGA Tour will look for a better date for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, too. Right now, it's not in a good spot. Maybe if they have it as a lead into the Players, it would be awesome. I think Players would love that. I would like to see that. So that's down the line. But Jack said, hey, if they move it, why couldn't Muirfield Village host the PGA Championship one year? And it could. It's that good. I mean, it is that good. It is that well-conditioned. It could host a major championship on 10 days' notice. Just like Oakmont is kind of the backup that if something catastrophic were to happen to a major championship venue, the USGA would call up Oakmont tomorrow and be like, hey, bad news. We got to have blah, blah, blah championship at your venue. Would you be willing to help us out? And Oakmont is tacitly said, yeah, we would be that emergency venue, even though they're on a regular rotation to host USGA events. I would love that. And that's part of the thing I've talked about with, and there's kind of this debate in golf of what is the benefit to the PGA of America of moving the PGA Championship from August, being the last of four majors. So if you have to win the single season Grand Slam, guess where you got to do it? Right now, it's got to be at the PGA Championship. That would make it the most important major in the history of majors if that happens. If you move it to May, you're second. To win the Grand Slam, you still got to win the PGA Championship, but instead, the fourth major would be the oldest and the only one not played in the United States, further increasing the profile of my favorite major championship, the Open. So the PGA of America loses that potential cachet. Now, admittedly, that has happened twice in a century, that twice in the last 100 years that someone has either won all four majors, they were different then for Bobby Jones, or that they threatened to win all four majors, Tiger Woods, realistically. So, and he didn't do it in consecutive order. He did it spanning calendar years. So it doesn't happen that often. So you're really not losing that. But it opens up other venues. It opens up other possibilities. And it knocks out places in the Northeast, like Oak Hill, knocks out places to some extent. Basically, if you're above the Mason-Dixon line, if you're above the Maryland-Northern border, you're kind of out. I mean, maybe like a place like Aronimink could host. It's a great golf club. It's right near Philly. Be a little bit of an issue. It might be cool some mornings, but it's going to be 85 degrees today here in D.C., and it's June 1st. 3 weeks back, we were having days in the mid-70s, and we had one in the 80s. So it's possible. We're just a straight shot pretty much across from Western PA into Columbus, Ohio. Why not? We've had hot days for the Memorial. Why not? So I think that's an interesting thing. I think that's an interesting proposition. And I think it further feeds into there are more venues than you think that can host a May PGA Championship as opposed to August. You're not really losing as many venues as you think. You're losing some traditional PGA Championship venues. You're gaining others. You're allowing yourself to go play a major in Florida in May, in Texas in May, in Arizona in May. You can't do that right now in August. You tell me, I mean, when they went and had Southern Hills host the last PGA Championship that it did in 07, it was 106 degrees one day. 106. I don't care if that's dry heat or not. That's hot. I know it's Oklahoma. That's hot. That's not good. But if you held it in May, it's like 82 degrees. Primo. Sounds great. So you can bring back that major venue and not worry about people dying from dehydration out on the golf course. You open up other places in the South. You open up places in Alabama, in Georgia, in Louisiana. I mean, you make some options available that just aren't right now. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that based on everything that I've heard, everything I understand, the PGA of America didn't say anything last week at Trump National, like, yeah, we're doing it. But there was a little bit of a discussion about it. And it's doesn't seem like it's final, at least publicly. But I get the sense they're going to go with it. I get the sense they're going to do it. Because, again, what they're giving up in terms of being the last one doesn't necessarily outweigh what they would get in going to being the second major. Getting a little bit better pub, getting a little bit better date, the schedule flowing better. Golf season's really just starting in May, so you could see the PGA Championship is kind of the kickoff to the golf season. They could wrap it around that. There's a lot of marketing opportunities there. Not that you or I as fans necessarily care about that. We just want to see good golf. And you'll get that, and you'll get some cool new venues in the process. Anyway, I hope Memorial is a great week. It's usually an excellent tournament. We've had some kind of unexpected winners the last few years. And you know, with David Lingmuth and Dirk McGirt, and we've also had some awesome champions. We've had Cooch, we've had Hideki, we've had some awesome winners. So, should be a great weekend. All right, that's going to do it for us on this edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Next time, hopefully next week, we will talk to you about what happened at Memorial. Hopefully there will be nothing outside of golf that requires our attention next week, and we can continue marching toward that U.S. Open, just a few weeks away from Erin Hills. Very excited about that. One last thing before we go. If you're a fan of us and you're a fan of the 19th Hole Golf Show on Golf News Net, first of all, thank you. Second of all, would you please consider joining GNN Plus for just $10 a year? $10 a year. You can get an ad-free experience on our site. You can get access to our high-end fantasy picks, to our fantasy resources that no one else has, to me directly for fantasy advice, and to giveaways and contests that just are not available through the general public. And on top of that, we're going to be expanding over the course of the summer all of the stuff that we put behind the paywall for GNN Plus, so that only people who are GNN Plus members can see some of the great original content that we're doing and the analysis that you won't find anywhere else. So $10 a year, not a whole lot, just a sleeve or two of balls at your pro shop, and you get an awesome year's worth of experience at Golf News Net. So check it out at golfnewsnet.com. I appreciate it. All right, till next week, I'm Ryan Belgi saying thank you for listening to our show. Talk to you next time on the 19th Hole.